Hey, this is Daryl Kirk with Stand Up Paddle the World Radio, man. This is really an amazing interview that we've got going right now. Tanar Hall. She lives out on beautiful Orcas Island, hour and a half from Seattle, north of Seattle. And she is a rower. She rows a boat. So backwards in the night, not knowing where you're going because you're rowing your boat. She is also a surf ski. She paddles a surf ski. For those who don't know what a surf ski is, it's kind of the top fuel dragster of the water. Very narrow, very fast boats. She has paddled the 7048, which is our epic 70-mile race in 48 hours. She has done that successfully twice. But what we're going to kind of talk about today is a pretty big 7048 we had here that beached a lot of folks off of the coast about halfway through it over by Indianola in Washington. Incredible, dangerous weather. And we're gonna hear some of that. We're also going to hear about Tanar out on her surf ski recently. And separated about a quarter mile offshore without a leash, and a pretty scary event. And that's actually how I met her. She had told the story on Facebook about this. We reached out to her. But anyway, this is an amazing person. I'm really excited to hear about her and her life up there in Orcas Island and who she is. And, she's getting into SUP. She's got Rob Casey's SUP. You know, you hear about Rob Casey all the time on this show. She has his SUP, and she's promising to be on that and do the 7048 by stand-up paddleboard. But man, let me get out of here. Tanar, how are you, man? This incredible stories. Where do we begin? Man, you've had a lot of danger and adventure here.
I'm not even really sure where to start.
What about this? Let's start on this 7048, the latest 7048. You know, that is a golden race for our folks here to do 70 miles in 48 hours on all types of different watercraft, mostly SUP. But this year, a lot of folks had to get out halfway through the race after all that because of this extraordinary bad weather that we had. Talk about that.
Yeah, it got to be pretty intense. I was rowing my Moss Arrow, and I got really grateful for, there's the e-sound. It gets kind of like a wind tunneling effect in, blowing into Crescent Beach where I launch. So I was able to do a lot of rough water practice. And a lot of times when the wind gets big, I would launch and just row on the beam and get used to bracing and all sorts of fun balancing and trying to get my oars from getting snagged and learning to relax and just go with it. And that is how I got as far as I did on this year, 7048. Wasn't really that bad, except for the chaos of just all the bodies around and all the different crafts and trying to not hit people in that tiny little channel. But then going up through Colvos was pretty calm and pleasant. And then it came time to cross to Blake. And by then it was about 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And that's when things got pretty interesting. I think the wind was blowing maybe about 20 knots.
Yeah, 20-25 is what I heard, yeah. Wow.
There were cross waves, and a lot of people I knew on their surf skis were having fun.
You can't really talk. I mean, it was really dramatic from what I've heard. What was that like at night? What's that like when you're out there at night?
You know, it was, I think just kind of zen-ish about it, for lack of a better word. It's just tackling things as they came, going from moment to moment. I'm surprised I didn't actually panic. Just basically when big waves came, I would brace for the big and wait for the set to pass and then course correct and just go from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. And then next thing I know, I'm in the lee of Blake and the water's calm there. and I stop and have a snack. And that's when I think all the feelings kind of came out. I'm like, whoa, I just did that.
Yeah.
And had my snack and checked to make sure the Bremerton Ferry, see where the Bremerton Ferry was, because
yeah,
had to do the same thing again to make it to Bainbridge, but longer.
Yeah. Oh boy.
So that was the, there were a few moments of panic during the crossing to Bainbridge, I think, because having the ferry factor in that. Oh, so crossing to Blake, yeah, there's the Southworth Ferry, and you're out of that line pretty quick.
Okay.
The Bremerton Ferry can come out of like nowhere. But it was actually docked when I started the crossing. But I was like, if I capsize there and, you know, it's taken me some time to recover and then the ferry comes, then yikes. I think that's my biggest fear for that crossing.
And what about these other boats that are coming through at night? You know, were those concerns at all? There's a lot of boats in general, probably not with those storm conditions, but
the boat traffic at night is pretty, isn't, you know, it's a lot more pleasant than during the day when you have all your pleasure boaters out there that,
yeah,
like to buzz you and wake you and
yeah,
things like that.
Kind of nice to say, hey, what's that white light there? You can see a little bit better at night. Yeah, daytime people are just not paying attention. And yeah,
that's actually one of the biggest hazards out there, is the not paying attention. But as far as the freighters and stuff go, we are forbidden to go into the shipping lanes. If you go into the shipping lanes, you're automatic DQ'd. But you can get the freighter wake can affect you. Back when I paddled it in 2019, I got hit, waked pretty bad by the freighters, like off of Bainbridge. And that was exciting, but nothing compared to this past go around.
Weather was something else. What about, you're out there at night, you're what about the other people out there with you in the race? What's that like? Are they next to you? Are you guys kind of talking, helping each other out? What's going on there?
So I think some people do kind of group up to paddle or row or do things together. I did not, not intentionally. I was by myself for most of those crossings. I think it was the high schoolers that built their own big canoe, and I did end up coming up next to them, and they were jumping the waves, and they're like, woo! And are we allowed to say naughty words? They're like, woo! Holy shit!
Oh, gosh.
You're single! It's ripping! You're a badass! And I'm like,
oh gosh.
And they're like, you can stay with us for a little bit. And I was like, you know, I think I will. And then, so I rode alongside them for maybe the last quarter of the crossing.
That was a big craft too, right? There's a lot of them on that thing. Yeah.
So, and they were going a bit slower than me, but it's okay. I was grateful for the company in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially like their energy. They were fun. They were a fun boat. So that's the thing too, when you do meet up with people, you know, so there's like long times where you are by yourself, or I was by myself, but then when I intersect with other people and chat, it kind of revitalizes. So they were a fun group. And then we get to Bainbridge, and then that's when I had another moment of, I just did that. Oh my goodness. And not only that, the cross waves stopped being all crossy, and then they just kind of lined up for just a nice.
So you had several triumphs here. Really rough water leading up to the final, too rough to to go on your next leg in Indianola, right? Or
it was going along Bainbridge was just fun.
Oh, good, good.
Brian, you know, you can surf an arrow. There's actually this really cool picture of Chris Moss on like this 5-foot wave.
Oh, man. Wow.
So, but I don't know how to cross surf with it, but I can ride straight on. And so there was that, and there was the skyline of Seattle, and I just tackled some pretty serious water in the dark going backwards. I'm feeling really, really good. And then next thing I know, fly past Bainbridge and I'm going into Indianola, I should have been going towards Point Jefferson.
Yeah.
That way. The wind had other ideas and they were pushing me in to Indianola, and it was big again. And once again, I don't know how to cross surf.
Yeah.
I believe it can be done, but that's going to require.
That leg took out a lot of people right there. They just had to stop it. It was unfortunate. You guys were halfway through, you know, and like you said, you've already been through a lot of epic battles on the way to that point.
It's true.
Wow.
I did have kind of like a really, so I did decide to like just stop fighting it because most of Indianola is a beach. And I was just kind of riding with it, not even forcefully making progress, just kind of going with the waves and staying on top and kind of hoping it would die down enough for me to easily cut over.
Yeah.
But it didn't. And I was like, well, I decided to land and check the weather and reassess my strategy. I had not been out of my boat at all at this point. And this is, this is about 2 to 3 a.m. and the race started at 7. So I've been in the boat for a while. Yeah. So I decided it was time. And my husband sends me off with a mocha and a thermos. I was like, I'm going to pull over to the beach, have my carry mocha and check the weather and go from there. And then I saw this light and I ended up working my way over to the light. And there was one of my friends, a team Wears My Hat, who is also a rower, just standing there holding her boat in these breakers. I think her boat had capsized. She lost all of her food and her shoes. And I'm heading in, and then there's that dreaded crunch. And I call out to Jana, and she sees me and she lifts her boat out, and then she comes and helps me get my boat out of the water, and there's my skag. My skag is gone.
Wow.
So she was going to keep on racing. I gave her most of my food. I only held on to enough to wait for my husband to come pick me up, who had just arrived in Port Townsend. Bless his heart, and have to come, like, he drove from Tacoma to Port Townsend, and then he gets a call saying, I don't have my skag. So I give Jana my food, help her launch, and then, so I wear a wetsuit when I row in that.
Okay.
A lot of rowers don't wear wetsuits. I think if you're in water that big and the sound of, you know, it's uncomfortable.
It's sad to say, I mean, it is cold.
Yeah, yeah.
It's colder when it's 80 degrees Fahrenheit when you're jumping into 50 degree water, you know, even. So.
Well, no, cold water shock is a thing.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
I did not change out of my wetsuit. I had dry clothes that I kept vacuum sealed for emergencies like that. I could open them up and get into dry clothes. I didn't open it up, and I just paced the beach. And then next thing I know, I found my skag. And went to reattach it. I had some marine putty, put it on. And then a canoe team came in and they gave me some duct tape. And next thing I know, and then they helped me relaunch. I'm like, wow, I'm back at it. And then I'm just going so slow, but I'm like exhausted. And it's, you know, another system was coming in, but I made it to point, no point. And then saw a friend who was on the beach with his son, and that helped re-energize me again. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to go for it and try to finish before the next system comes in. So I turn around and go as far as Hansville?
Yeah, Hansville, yes. Yeah.
And I hit a rip and couldn't punch through it. I'm going about 1, maybe 2 miles an hour. I'm like, this is stupid. I'm going to go and get a hamburger. And then I go back to the burger place, and turns out my that trail of, I had seen in the water that I thought was my skag was just remnants of duct tape.
Oh my gosh.
In retrospect, my skag probably fell off again, maybe before, like, around Kingston.
Wow.
So I was done.
Okay.
Some people
got beyond Indianola then. You went quite a ways, somewhat up the Kitsap Peninsula then. Made it to Point No Point then.
5024 Club.
Woo! Yeah, okay, good.
I probably made it about 55 miles.
I've started seeing that sticker around the Ballard Elks Paddle Club, the 5024.
I'm hoping Harry saves one for me. It's going to go on my boat. But,
hey, Oh, go ahead. Keep going.
No. That was it.
I want to talk with you more about your prep. If you were really well prepared, a lot of things that are hard to carry, with you, you want to go light, and you're pretty prepared. But, let's talk about this separate incident that you had on your surf ski off of Orcas Island there. You were separated from your craft there without a leash, or your leash was a quick release and it broke, there was something wrong with that model leash or something. But talk about that. What was that like? This is a pretty scary event.
Once again, I'm used to being out in that. And I don't usually on days like that, the hardest part is launching. It's pretty chaotic. And our beach is not a nice sandy beach. It is rocky. So I'm really focused on just trying to get out and get situated and without getting blown up on the rocks and damaging my boat.
Hallmark of surf skis. They're very fragile, very lightweight. Yeah.
Yes, I love my boat. Like, my baby.
Yeah.
And I have princess feet, so I have to take my Tevas off and secure them and sorts of things to finagle with. And then I get going, and then I remembered I did hook in my quick release, but I don't remember actually looking at it and yanking on it. I just, it's second nature to just kind of squeeze it, put it on, call it good. And then on days like that, when, I think it was probably about 20 sustained against the tide, which was good. I was wanting some good rough water practice.
Yeah.
And I go out and I start off on the beam. So here's the thing, I am by myself, which, if you've read that Deep Trouble book.
Yes, yeah.
Number one rule is wear your life jacket. Number two rule is don't go alone. Never go alone. But the problem is if I don't go alone, I don't go.
It's hard, yeah. Yeah, it's hard even where we have so many paddlers going out in Seattle here. But,
yeah. That's the, so I did, I moved here from Seattle, and I don't think I would have gotten to the point where I could go out alone here if it weren't for the community in Seattle. Just working, like going out with me, and there's been classes, and then there's the Wednesday night surf ski group, and then, my dear mentor friend that will go and do Edmonds runs with me, and friends down at the gorge, that have babysat me, and everybody looks out for each other, and that's, without that, I don't think I would have gotten to the point where I was capable of being out on a 29
day.
Wow.
These people were all out with you, and they weren't out here with you. I mean, remotely, that experience, that, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, I love living on the island. We moved here about a year and a half ago, and it is wonderful, and I love it so much.
Wow.
I really miss the Seattle paddling scene so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been, every transition.
It's ironic because you have so much incredible water up there where you are, but getting out to it or finding the people to get out there with you, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the I did on that same day. There was a group of 8 suppers.
Okay.
Going out, and they did the full downwind run for all of East Sound, which I have not done even on calmer days because I'm by myself. Though run that, I can easily manage. Well, I don't want to sound nonchalant. I mean, because you always need to take things seriously, but it's within my capabilities.
Yeah.
But I still won't do it by myself because, mm-hmm. bummer. Next time, because of this incident, I've made contact with the suppers. So I should have, at least some eyes on. And one of them, we won't be too mismatched pace-wise. You probably have heard of Kruger.
Oh, my God. Yeah. My hero. That guy is unbelievable. Yeah. Another Orcas Island guy. He's up there in Orcas. So.
Yeah. Super, super lucky. I actually, my first encounter with him was at the 2019 7048.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Leaving that channel out of Tacoma, it was my first time doing it. And I'm in my surf ski then, and there's the crowds along the side, and they're cheering, and I'm all stoked. And then I realize I'm riding the wash of a sup. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I have no shame. I am riding the wash of a sup. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Turns out that was Carl Kruger, but I didn't know him at the time.
Carl went all the way from Port Townsend to Alaska, as you know. I think he was the second craft in, beating all of these boats, sailboats, everything, and unbelievable. Second craft in on, this was, I believe, the second ever 7048. He was the second craft in on a stand-up paddleboard all the way to Alaska. He is incredible, you know.
I think me and a surf ski.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be about that.
That's great. A surf ski on Carl Kruger's wash. I love that.
I think, no shame. It's all good.
You picked the fastest sup guy out there on that, so that, on that race.
No. I'm looking forward to getting out with them in the future on the next big one.
What was that like, though? Man, so here you are separated from your craft. I mean, this was really serious.
I was about a quarter mile offshore. On those days like that, so yeah, I launch by myself. I carry all sorts of gear. I have a personal locator beacon and a strobe light, and I had a paddle leash on my paddle that attaches to my wrist, and flares. I did not have my radio because usually there's nobody out, and with the mountains all around, I figured it's useless to call for help. But, I could have used it to communicate it with help. I'm just going to bring it from now on. I got some flack about that, and that is correct to give me flack about that.
So
anybody listening, I will henceforth always carry my radio and the sound.
What about a cell phone in a waterproof case? Did you have that? That's always another first line of communication.
I have this cool little magnetic open dry bag. My cell phone was in that and tethered to my PFD and in the pocket.
Oh, good.
And I had texted my husband saying, I'm going to dry suit it and walk down. So I live in walking distance to Crescent Beach. So on big days when it's too windy for me to get my boat on and off the car by myself, I just walk it down the street, put it on Yak Yak, and wave to the people I'm blocking traffic for. Sorry. I get launched, I get settled, and then I'll go on the beam a little bit. And if I can't manage it on the beam, I go home. I have done that. There have been times, like one time I went through all the hassle of launching and did one remount, and I'm like, I am not feeling this. I'm going to go in.
Yeah.
But on this day, went on the beam, was fine. And then I turned to go upwind. And a lot of times I'll do, so on big days like that, I'll stay within a half mile to a mile of shore.
Yeah.
And I like to do kind of like a warm up mini downwinder. And so I was about a quarter mile out, and then I went to go turn downwind to go back to shore. And I capsized on the turn, which isn't really a big deal. We do that all the time. Practice remounts all the time. And I fell downwind of my boat. And here's one thing I also did wrong. The boat was coming right at me, and I just dove underneath it without grabbing it.
Oh, yeah.
I need, when I practice my remounts, it's not just about getting the boat. I need to try to get myself conditioned to grab my boat.
You don't want to get hit by the boat, but you still got to grab it too.
Yes. So I dove underneath my boat, and then I turned.
And why the urgency to grab it? It's so light and so big that it's like a wing just flying off, or what?
Yeah. It will just blow right away from you.
Wow.
Yeah. This is why we always.
I know, I saw the same, but you know, you're right. I mean, no matter what, on a sup, depending on how you fall off, you could kick that board out 20 feet in a second, you know, and it, yeah, yep.
Yeah, I don't, from the times I've fallen on a sup, I think it'd be a lot more tricky to grab it than the surf ski. But also, you're falling further, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's a thing. I'm going to try to work to try to make it instinctual to grab my boat. But I have not. And when I turned to go grab my boat, it was out of reach, which isn't normally a big deal. That happens all the time, too. And I go down to grab my leg leash to pull the boat back to me.
Yep.
And it's not there.
Oh, man.
And by then, the boat was too far away from me. I started trying to swim for it and made no progress. Oh, I was wearing a dry suit, too.
Oh, okay.
So, which was just made no progress. Just such a big, huge drag. I tried to swim for it. I did not really make any progress at all. The tide was going out. Waves were crashing over my head. And that's when I had a moment of panic. I don't think it was full on, oh my goodness, I'm gonna die. It was, I'm in a bit of trouble. So I just kind of floated there for a minute, and I actually said help out loud a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kind of snapped out of it at that point and just like hugged my life jacket and kind of kicked myself up out of the water more. And I pulled out my cell phone and texted my husband. Just, I didn't take it out of the dry bag, so it's tricky to text through the dry bag, but I'm like, help, help, help.
Yeah.
Leash failure, help.
Oh gosh.
Help. Like just ping, because, you know, he's at work. And then it turns out he was in a meeting. And then I did that until I saw on my way. And then I put my phone back into my pocket and kind of did like I did for the 7048 crossing. Waves come and set. When the waves were big, I just focused on keeping my head above the water. And then when the set passed, I used my paddle and pulled myself in, and then rinse and repeat. And all in all, I was in the water for about 30 minutes.
In a dry suit, luckily.
In a dry suit. Some other good feedback I've gotten is the dry suit versus the wet suit. I've had a couple of paddlers say that, you know, talk about the dry suit failures. Yeah, that would've been really bad. And recommended I get a 5/4 surfing wetsuit.
Yeah, our standard 5/4/3 for new paddlers to the Sound. That's always a good one, you know, in the winter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Evo had one on sale, and I ordered it.
Oh, good.
Very exciting. See, I listened to feedback.
Yeah.
You know, when I post these stories,
that is interesting. Sorry to interrupt. You are kind of like this traveler. You know, you just pick up these things, and then you happen to have them with you, or you've subconscious. You know, you've brought these. You've picked up this collection of things that you bring with you for safety, or people. Even that's so incredible. What you said about these people were with me. All of this history. You know.
Yeah.
These classes I took, or the people that took care of me on the Columbia River. It's really interesting.
No, it's kind of like, so I have a background in math, and if you write a proof, you don't say, it is a we. We are always we. It is the collective.
Wow.
All the work that has gone to this moment. And
wow.
It's the same with paddling. It's we.
Yeah, that is great. Wow, that's just a whole nother meaning, you know, to this. Wow. We have someone in our community who was separated from his craft. I don't want to identify too much, but it was on the Columbia River, and they were separated from this craft and then got to the craft, but then had to hold on to it, and in the process started developing hypothermia, and they continued to be able to survive out there and were sure of their ability. But what he said was, at some point your body has to come to terms with its own mortality, and so it needs to prepare that space. So even if you're able to hold on till rescue comes, which it didn't forever for him, at some point your body kicks in and it says, hey, you need to make peace with yourself. You need to come to terms with your life if you do die here. So, and that scared the hell out of me when I heard that story, you know, that we don't have we don't have control of that when that part of our body kicks in and says, hey, man, let's come to terms with this, you know. And about when that happened, he was rescued, thank God. I don't know, like... Yeah, I'd put that in terms of, you know, wow. Anyway, I just wanted an opportunity to tell that story. It really surprised me, that part of survival and, you know, this thing that kicks in naturally. And,
well, I mean, and that's something we all should consider. I mean, it doesn't matter how, I mean, experts die. You know, it's
yeah.
we go to try to find our place out there, but yeah. We are... If you think you've mastered it, you're fooling yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it does not matter how well prepared you are or what your skill level is. You are not above the elements.
Wow.
And you are not above failure either. User error, equipment failure, it's all
wow.
A thing.
Tanar, you said you're a math person. Do you go out there on every launch and think, I've got a 20% chance of getting killed today, or the gear failure, or what, you know, do you look at these statistically, or?
No.
Good.
Maybe on a subconscious level. I always figure, like, my subconscious is a lot smarter than my conscious level is. Because sometimes, like, ideas, like, I have no idea where they came from. They're just boom. And I'm like, oh, well,
wow.
I guess it's been in the background somewhere. So
yeah.
It's possible that
the
player has figured that out. But no, I don't walk out saying,
no,
it's a 5% chance of this or that.
What you do though, this is really astounding to hear you say that, though, there's just this collection of friends and travelers and people you met along the way that all culminated into your survival out there, or, you know, your safety on the water. It's really cool.
Yeah, and I'm grateful for it,
man. Well, man, enough of this morbid. I think it's not morbid, it's incredible that we have these opportunities to talk about this stuff, because this is everything. That water safety is everything, you know. And here you're another example of it. I always tell people, they go, I say, the more experience paddlers have, the more apt they are to wear a leash and a PFD, you know, a flotation device.
I do want to make it pretty clear, if I were not wearing my PFD, I would be dead. I couldn't I had struggled keeping my head above the water even with it. Yeah, getting separated from your boat is no joke. Wear your leash, people.
Yeah, yeah.
Wear your life jacket. But as it was, and dress for, and prepare for immersion. There was all sorts of ways that I could have died, but I walked ashore. By then, my boat beat me to shore. My GPS on my boat showed that it made it, I think it got about 5.4 miles an hour without me in it.
Oh gosh, you were even recording.
Yeah, I have the track. So like my auto pause kicked in my upwind. I was going so slow.
Oh boy.
Yeah, but some people found my boat and they could not see. So that was a thing too. I'm within a quarter mile of shore and people could not see me.
Yeah, that's even crazier is you'll have a Coast Guard station there and people still drown. And the Coast Guard was a quarter mile away. There was nothing they could do. Nobody saw them or they couldn't get out there in time a quarter mile away. And, you know.
That's the, if I had not had the things I did, I would have been one of those. But yeah, I walked on shore to a crowd of onlookers. There were three sheriff's cars and someone directing traffic and an EMS. And I do not like taking up space, but that was a lot of space. And I'm just like, oh my, I was so embarrassed. I'm like, I'm so sorry, y'all. But the EMS was like, do you need medical attention? I'm like, no, I'm fine.
Oh boy.
So then they cleared out and my husband, can you believe he didn't think to grab straps for the boat when he came down to the beach? So he went back to the house to grab straps for the boat because I wasn't going to walk it home at this point. And I just sat on the beach and picked up my phone to text my mentor friend who, you know, I wouldn't, yeah, big, huge, huge influence on me. And I knew she would understand what I'd been through, you know, because that's another thing too. Like when you're out there, you don't see it, you just don't know.
It is interesting because, you know, we naturally want to help. And, you know, I always think about this one EMT person. He was off duty and he jumped across some barriers and he fell 60 feet between the highway. He just, you know, you want to help and it's like, that's another problem when you're out there and you're not properly prepared. Not that you weren't. Your leash gave way. You had it on. It was a defect in the leash, I believe. But then other people are involved in this now also.
And that's a thing you have to take into consideration, too. I'm grateful I did not have anyone put themselves at risk to help me.
Right, right.
Had I been out... Had I done the full downwinder and that happened a couple of miles offshore, I mean, people would have, I wouldn't have been able to make it in. I would have had to hit my beacon and I would have had to have been rescued. And in those conditions, yes, it puts the rescuers in danger too. But please call for help.
Yeah. Don't.
So I'm saying that's things you need to consider before you launch.
Yeah. Tanar, let me ask, let's get away from this. I want to learn more about you. What is Tanar? Where'd that name come from? That's like someone you were named after, or what is that?
It actually is a name I picked for myself.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's from Ursula Le Guin's Earthsea series.
Okay.
She is, yeah. I realize, so a lot of the rowing and paddling community in Seattle originally know me as Dot. First 7048 was Dot Hall.
Okay.
I never liked my name, even when I was a kid. I didn't like it.
Dorothy or Dot? Yep. Dorothy. My aunt Dorothy was Dot, we always call it. Okay.
Yeah. There's if you Google, there's a lot of obituaries.
Of Dorothy's, you're saying.
Yes.
And like, ironically, getting carried away in a tornado in The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy, you know, so I
Yeah, there was the Where's Toto stuff growing up.
Oh gosh, that's too big. Okay.
It was, I just never liked it, and I never identified with it. And a little while ago, like a few years ago, I realized there was absolutely no reason I needed to keep it.
Cool.
So we changed it. It's now Freya Tenar. Nice. My husband picked Freya, and I picked Tenar.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So.
Wow. What? How did you get into the water? Like, where are you from first? Like, where were you born? Or.
North Carolina.
Outside
of Mebane, like it's in the Piedmont. You know, it's a couple hours from the lovely Outer Banks and a couple hours from the lovely mountains. And.
Oh wow. Beautiful.
Yeah, like Styx, like grew up in the woods, damming creeks. And
now that sounds like Mayberry.
I've been to Mayberry.
You have? The Andy Griffith Show.
Yep.
Okay.
A lot of people ask, because I am a rower, and a common question for rowers is, did you row in college? And I'm like, no, I was smoking and drinking in college.
Oh gosh.
and in grad school too. Like I was kind of like drinking a pot of coffee a day, chain smoking, just so grossly unhealthy.
Get through that degree,
there was a lot of factors, but I think a lot of, like, I was more living in my head. I was living in my head more than anywhere else. So what I was doing to my body didn't really matter as long as my head was still going.
And this was math. You were math degree or?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would sympathize with you if it was math. But
well, it's like playing, you know, and telling stories. It's like piecing together a big puzzle and then writing a story about it.
Wow.
It was a fun, if you're going to live in your head, it's a good way to do it.
Wow.
But then there's a whole long, you can read my memoirs one day, how I end up in Seattle.
Yeah.
And married and pregnant.
Yeah.
And I quit all the substances at that point. And then, and that was a rough couple of months combined with morning sickness, you know, going from smoking a pack of cigarettes a day to cold turkey.
Wow.
On top of I just like kind of laid around and drooled. It was terrible.
Wow. Good for you, man.
I decided to start setting a better example for my daughters. I didn't pick up smoking. I hardly.
Where was this, in North Carolina or?
No. This was I moved to Seattle at this point.
Okay, great. Good.
Yeah. We have to fast forward a whole bunch of. So I went from North Carolina to San Francisco, back to North Carolina.
Yeah.
And then ended up in Seattle.
Wow. That's great.
Take a chance on a guy.
Wow. Good. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Wow.
We got me a little 10-foot recreational kayak that I used to take out on Lake Washington pre-dawn, and I would launch at Magnuson and go just far enough out past to see Mount Rainier and watch the sunrise. And that was my piece. That's when my water time really, really began. Was just in those moments. And my daughter was an infant at this point, and that was just kind of my time. And then eventually I was out with our friends at the Arboretum, and we saw crews go by, and I'm like, that looks fun.
Yeah.
So I did a learn to row at Lake Washington, and then ended up joining Martha's Moms, which I love them. My time with the moms. Huge impact on me. Wonderful team, wonderful ladies. Go to their potlucks. Trust me. I would only bring paper plates because anything I would contribute was wholly inadequate compared to. they're great. And so much fun and so supportive.
This is a rowing team. Then
yes.
Good.
Yeah.
Great.
And then I have a story of how I progressed into surf ski after that.
You just kind of happened along on a kayak, you know, but the true water love hasn't come in yet, or is that?
I think by then it had. I think the mornings with my daughter as an infant, like the sunrise mornings out on Lake Washington was really the. I think it's been
you had your daughter with you at that on the boat.
No.
Okay.
So I would I would do this before my husband would go to work.
Yeah, good.
So he would be home with the baby.
Yeah, okay.
No.
I've seen dogs coming out of the portholes on these in that path in that area, and I'm sure I've seen a baby in a porthole too. You know, on the bow or stern.
See,
I thought I'd ask. So.
No.
Yeah, I waited till my son was about six before he got on the SUP with me.
I'm not going to go into that.
No, no problem. Let's move on. Okay. Yeah.
I guess that's the type of thing. Everybody knows their limits too. That's one of those things that it's like I don't want to be judgy on, but it's hard to not be judgy on, so I'm going to just shut up. But I think they were three or four. I started having them ride in the cockpit with me.
Great.
And now they have those little 6 foot.
Yeah,
sitting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Those are so cool.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I actually originally got a SUP to go out with them on that because the SUPs you can get on and off easy and
yes.
Attend to the kids as much. So that's how I got my SUP.
That's great.
Kids out.
When did this love of the water really sink in, or like you were saying, that trends over to, you know?
To when it kind of started being like a way of life.
Yeah.
I think it's with rowing, when I was with the moms, we have been talking about moving to Orcas Island forever. One of the things I was like, I don't think I can because I can't leave the moms. I can't imagine not having a rowing team. But that was before surf ski. And after surf ski, I transitioned away from the moms as much as I love them so much. I developed kind of the love for the open water.
You don't really surf ski together, right? They're so fast. You might be lucky to have one other person with you, or how does that work? I don't see 10 surf skis all together.
So on Wednesday nights, during daylight savings time at Magnuson, there's a fantastic group of people that launches out near Sail Sandpoint that will do time trials.
Oh, good.
And when I first got my surf ski, I joined this group, and how it worked was they let me go first.
Nice.
And then the slow people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the faster people, and then like Greg Barton would go and loop down to Log Boom and then come up and catch up with us. And that was one of my first kind of progressions with that was how, so I would go first and then everybody would pass me. And then they would turn the buoy, go to Shark Buoy, and then they would come back. And once they started turning, once I saw them start turning the buoy, I would turn around and cut the course short. And then we'd all come, and then they would still beat me in. and just, that was kind of a fun way of tracking my progress too. I remember the first time I actually made it to the shark buoy and, you know, everybody was still faster than me, but I was able to complete the course without falling in too far behind everybody.
Yeah.
You know, just and then just listening and talking with people. So yeah, there are, you know, there can be like 10 surf skis out at a time. Also in that same area is the Sandpoint Outrigger Club.
Yeah, and we love the sandbar. Ernie, I don't know if you know Ernie. He's great. Yeah, incredible. Yeah, Minnie, yes, all those guys. We really, our SUP community loves those guys and vice versa. That's great.
No, they are how I got SUP. Actually, it was them is how I found out about the Wednesday night group of surf skiers. They put on the Orca series race.
Yeah.
And they had this little short course.
PN Orca. Yeah. Or, yeah. PNW yeah. Orca. Yeah.
It was great. And I had my surf ski for maybe a week at mm-hmm. that point when I saw them advertising for, you know, come try this race. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And I did, and it turned out to be a shark buoy course, but that's how I met Ernie. I didn't finish the race at the time. I turned around, and it was a windy day, and it was my second time out in the boat. So I was like, I'm gonna go back. But everybody was so welcoming, and just
those
wonderful.
Guys talk about Ohana. I mean, they are like family. Unbelievable. Yeah, they're, man, and they train hard. You know, I think they're kind of laying off their training a little bit now because of COVID. But man, I came in, we spent a month or two with them. Our paddleboard group was invited back in 2016, 2017. And man, a lot of late nights, man. You come in late or you come in on the weekend and you're scooping ice out of the seat of the OC6. You know, they are hardcore, man.
They're how I got comfortable night paddling. Because after daylight savings, the surf ski group stopped, but the Sandpoint people kept going. So I'd show up, and I was scared to go out in the dark by myself. But they were there, and they invited me to come along with them on my surf ski, and so I was able to paddle with them. And it was another huge progression of how I got to be here was their help.
That's great.
I love that community. I wish they were here.
You know, getting back to safety, they are so safety minded and really are safe, but at the same time they really have a level of adventure and of risk taking too at the same time. So there's you know, it's really incredible group, man.
Many, do you know, so this year in the crazy 70-48, Minnie was the first female finisher. She just surfed right through all of that.
That was so good. Incredible. Yeah.
Props,
We want to get her and Patrick on here. Patrick, while you guys were taking refuge, which was a very smart idea, Patrick somehow got out in the middle of the sound there and rode waves all the way all night long and finished. It was like, I can't wait to hear his story.
He's I like his videos. He's getting the kids out too. His kids are getting out in the water. He did the gorge this year with his son in a double.
Incredible.
That was another thing, going to the gorge this year after the 70-48, you know, I'm like, it was kind of like a big breakthrough for me.
Yeah.
Because it was light. Usually I do have a healthy amount of fear with mm-hmm. these things that I kind of have to work through.
Yeah.
But, you know, especially at the gorge, which I think is kind of funny because, like, I think about this every year. I'll fly down my bike going about 30, 35 miles an hour, where if I hit a pine cone wrong, I'm in the hospital, where if I fall into like the water, I'm wet. Like the initial, so when I start paddling for these things, the initial fear of capsizing can lead to almost a panic. So one of the best things I can do is capsize.
Wow. Yeah.
And then get back in the boat and be like, that was the thing. All right, then I paddle my best after getting thrown.
and you warm up too for some reason. If I'm cold and I fall in the water, I warm up. I don't know. I think the body goes into shock, and it's it's funny you say that. I do not like going fast on a bicycle. I don't like heights. You know, I'm not afraid of heights. I'm afraid of being, quadriplegic, if I fall. But the water I have no fear of, but it's interesting. I'm the opposite of you on that, so.
I think with me, it's it might be more of a fear of failure than a fear of safety.
Wow. Where did that come from, man?
Like the fear of failure?
A parent thing or childhood or where?
Oh, yeah, we won't go there.
Okay, no problem. No problem.
Yes. No, there is a lot of self-confidence issues, too, that the water has been really good at helping me work through. And that's kind of the... And it does help me to be more present. And, whereas before, I'm just living in my head, but out on the water, I'm living in the world.
Wow. Wonderful. Wow.
Eagles and seals and elements and camaraderie. And, it's been really good for drawing me.
We want to get out of our head. We want to be present, but that's a different way, a different motivation or what you're getting from that. That's really great, really getting out of my head and on the water so I can get rid of these fears.
It is, and it helps, it has helped carry over into life on land, too. These severe confidence issues I had, I can...
Yeah.
I've gotten better at managing the fear of failure and going out and trying a thing now. Whereas before, I think another thing too, like I was really good at math, so I didn't really try other things because math was like safe. Didn't have to, and I was right and I could prove it.
Yes. Yeah.
So it didn't really have to take much self-confidence to put myself out there because here's a proof. It's correct.
Wow.
But when you get into uncertainties, it's uncomfortable. And it's.
How do you put that towards, and math is predictable. There's a predictable path that you could follow in progression. Is that the same with the water? Or... I guess so. You take this training, you talk to more people, you've been collecting these stories and experiences and educations
and I like the logistical planning. But I think it's really good to, no matter how much planning you do, you still have to succumb to the chaos, to the out there. So I think that's been another aspect that's been really good for me is, yes, I do all this planning and overanalyzing, but when you're actually out there, if you're on a wave, you can do your rudder some, but you don't have complete control. And if you try to take complete control, you tense up and you go swimming. So you have to be willing to let go. And that has been very hard for me. So the water, in all aspects of life, like not having control is scary. But I've gotten some practice now. And I'm still here.
What's your biggest fear now? In anything, I mean.
Let's go for the easy question, shall we?
Yeah. Like, or what are you working on your surf ski now, or maybe your safety or anything? Like, what are you
working? Oh, safety. Well, surf, I am working on a new leash setup.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I don't think that classifies as like the biggest fear.
Yeah.
Well, there's the I want my family.
Yeah, I was just going to say your child or husband. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the climate change and what kind of world are we leaving for the kids?
Which we can do stuff locally, but globally it seems so difficult or making any difference. But, you know, it seems like we have a lot of power locally, or even our own, you know, footprint.
So I tell myself what I tell my kids. There's a lot of really big, bad, scary things out there. But there's people working on it.
Yeah.
And like with the school shootings after the big one down in Florida, when the kids put on the March for Our Lives in D.C.
Yeah,
took my daughter to that. Flew to D.C.
Wow.
You have to do these active shooter. I can't imagine. I mean, I guess the generation before mine had the nuclear bombs.
Yes. And how old was this daughter that flew down with you?
She's 11 now. Maybe 7. I don't know. I'm not
wow.
sure.
Pretty young then. Wow. Yeah.
But she also went with me to, we went to the Women's March in D.C. And she was 5 or 6 for that.
Wow. Okay.
There's big, bad, scary things, but people are trying. People are out there.
Yeah.
And every little bit helps. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't try to control it all.
Yeah.
Find good my-size jobs.
Wow. Well, man, Tanar, we've been talking an hour here, and I have just been captivated by these stories. I mean, really amazing. And just, I'm really excited to just the way you pick up things along the way on safety and stories and that, like you said, that camaraderie and that your fellow paddlers that were with you out on the water, you know, when they were, you know, 100 miles away. It's really amazing.
Once again, I'm very lucky.
Yeah. Hey, if someone wants to get into, really surf skis really seems to be what you're talking about. You know, we won't talk about tips or what kind of, you know, boat to get, but what do you think? What's a good way to start getting into that?
Go. Get a boat.
They're pretty expensive and hard to, you know, but.
Yes, no, there needs to be more programs like what they have at with the Sandpoint Outriggers, where you have club boats, and for the one of the reasons why I talk with my husband about that, why there's not really a scene here on Orcas, is because of there's a pretty big wealth gap here, and
yes,
you know, most of the and it's more of an older generation on here. Most people with money to buy these boats may not be in a place where they're ready to start these types of boats. Although I do say, even if you're 80 years old, get in a surf ski, go on a calm day. But
Orcas Island, you people that have 10 million and then it goes to 250 million. It's a big wealth gap even within the riches.
That's true too. I would love, if I had a lottery, I would buy some property and set up a model like the rowing clubs or the Sandpoint Outriggers, so it doesn't have to be such a classist
situation. You're right on. They'd scare up a boat real quick for you at Sandpoint, you know. Yeah.
And I would do that. So right now, if you are on Orcas Island and you want to try surf ski, contact me. I'll work with you on my boat. And I tell people that too. Nobody's taking me up on it, but it's genuine. I'll take you out. And you know, can at least learn if you like it before taking the $5,000 plunge. Or
yeah.
No, there does need to be more clubs. Same for rowing too. Like, yeah, because it is a way of life that lots of people could benefit from.
Oh man. Okay, we'll end with this. A couple things. What's your favorite book? I think the one you named yourself after, that series. Or
the Earthsea series. Yes, that's the favorite book.
What is it?
It's the Earthsea series.
Series by who? Tanar?
Oh, Ursula Le Guin.
Ursula Le Guin, okay.
And Tanar is a character that shows up starting in the second book.
Okay.
A lot of people classify them as children's books. But
okay.
If you read the latter ones. No.
Nice.
Not much.
Favorite music then? What?
I'm pretty eclectic on that too. Probably. Right now, I've been on a Devin Townsend kick for a few years now. I go through obsessions. Like I was obsessed with Yes.
I love Yes. My God.
Yeah, they're my husband and I dorked out over them. When the night we first met, I was living in San Francisco and he was in Seattle, and we had talked about going to see Yes, and if Yes ever went on tour again, it didn't matter where we were living, we would go together because we finally found somebody that loved Yes so much.
Man, that's great.
And then they didn't go on tour until I'd already moved to Seattle and I was with him, only we weren't married at the time. But we got our tickets and we were going to go see Yes, and then John Anderson gets sick and they canceled the tour.
Oh man.
So we got he made a playlist, put it on a CD, and we brought a boom box and went and sat outside WAMU with a six pack of beer and had our own Yes show in the parking
lot. Wow, that's great.
And that's when he proposed to me.
Oh my God. In a Yes concert or a self. Wow.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was very obsessed with Yes, and then Marillion, and now Devin Townsend he's got a new album coming out.
Wow. That's The Gates of Delirium. I think that's my favorite Yes album. I think, yeah, that's wonderful. Wow, man. Okay. One last question. You can answer any last thing you want to say.
It's never too late to try new things.
There we go. Great. Great. Man. Wow, Tanar, we're going to have you back on again. There's just so much to say. Man, we've spent an hour and 10 minutes here together and just hearing about the life for you. And I just love these overtones of just you're just picking up and collecting things as you go on through this great life. And wonderful. Wow. And I look forward to talking to you again. But, man, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, man, Tanar Hall, you got the invitation. If you're interested in the top fuel dragsters of open water paddling, that's it. Surf skis. They're fast, narrow, and long. Very fast. And give Tanar, hit her up on Facebook or something if you're interested in that. She's up in beautiful, she's in the San Juan Islands on Orcas Island, which is about an hour north of Seattle, a little bit longer, and beautiful, beautiful place. But wow, thank you so much for sharing. Incredible, these folks that we have come on the show here. Thank you so much for, you know, listening to Stand Up Paddle the World Radio, where we can hear these incredible folks in our Stand Up Paddle community and in other watercraft communities. But anyway, incredible hearing Tanar's story. Soon we are going to have Ken Driscoll from Glide Sup. He's going to be on the show here, and he's had some pretty rough and tumble adventures out on kayaks and broke his back, and he's going to talk about that and also how he created glide sup, inflatable sups, with some of his business partners. But this is Daryl Kirk. Thank you so much for listening every week. Stay up and stay on that board. Oh man, thanks so much, Tanar. That was unreal. Wow.
Stand Up Paddle the World Radio is brought to you by Treehouse Vacation Rental. Visiting Seattle? Live like a local. Treehouse Vacation Rental, 206-255-9770.